Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It is 14 minutes after 9 on a Monday, and rejoining me from last week is my twice roommate from Long Island, Tim. So what's going on? How are you this morning? How was your weekend?
Oh, it was great. I was filled with nothing but grandchildren, and and so they were all over the place. Trying to push my buttons, but it was great, and I had an opportunity to see my grandson, who's just turned 8 months again this morning. We watched him 5 days a week for my son and his wife, my daughter-in-law. So he's downstairs. He's decided to take a power nap for a while, but it was great. Thanks for asking.
Now, how many grandkids do you have?
We have a total of, 4, with one more on the way. So 4 working on 5. There's one in the family way, as they say, in the oven.
There you go. My grandson.
Casey's waiting on a second. She's going to have a boy this time.
My grandson turned 5 yesterday. So.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He goes, listen to this. He goes to an outdoor preschool. And my son's stationed at Camp Lejeune. And so they're telling me about, my grandson tells me about finding this lizard at school. Right. And the lizard was in his hand, and that the lizard tickled his hand and he dropped him, and then he couldn't find him. So I look at my son and I said, so what do they do when it rains? Because it is North Carolina. It's not like raining is exceptional or anything like that.
Right.
And my son says they put on raincoats and galoshes. I'm like, are you kidding me? He goes, no. It's outdoors. He said, evidently it's a big deal in Europe. So I go, so now I'm intrigued. And I'm speaking throughout the week. And so Friday morning, I didn't have anything to do. And so I tag along with my daughter-in-law to take my grandson to school. And so I'm looking over the fence because it's COVID, right? And the woman who runs it says, would you like to come in and look? I said, I'd love to. So I walk in and there's like this water fountain and my grandson like runs in. Now he wears his bathing suit, these clog things, and kind of a water shirt. I think that's what they call it, aqua shirt or something like that.
Right.
That's what he's in at school. And so he sees his friends, and they're at this like fountain kind of thing, and they're pouring water into different things. And then there's this tree, and it has some branches, big branches that have been cut down and painted, and you can jump from branch or like stump to stump to stump, and then you jump off. Then they have this kiln where you put your mud pies in to bake them, and then they have over there there's a mud hole, and then there's a couple of lean tos that, you know, when it's really sunny they can get under and read underneath there.
Right.
And then they have a water slide. And so I said, like, so what's the mud hole for? And it's like, for them to play in? I'm like, so they, like, at school they play in the mud hole? They're like, yeah.
Yeah, they got their rash guards on.
so.
No rashes.
I know. So, but it's all outdoors. I said, look, right. The only way this gets better is if you get a BB gun when you walk in.
Right?
Right. This thing.
No, they might aim them at the teachers.
No, they actually like their teachers because they're outside the whole time.
Okay, so they'll be aiming them at the bullies.
Exactly. And so,
hey, get away from my girlfriend.
Exactly. Remember, an armed society is a polite society. It just makes me laugh because, you know, he go every day, you know, he's outside and that's his preschool. I told my daughter-in-law, I said, so what happens when he goes to like kindergarten? And he comes home from his first day and say, Mom, you'll never believe what they wanted me to do. What? His name is Finn. What, Finn? They wanted me to sit in a chair for like 5 hours. Like, that ain't happening, Mom. I told her, I said, you're going to be homeschooling his ass forever. And she said, oh my God, I hope not. But anyway, interesting. It was, you know, and evidently it's a popular way to do preschool in Europe. I didn't know that, but
it's a better way, just like post-traumatic winning.
There you go. Well, let's get back to our conversation of last week. For those of you who don't know, you can listen to part one of Tim's story. But essentially, I don't know, maybe a month ago, Tim told me, and we've been roommates twice in our Marine Corps lives together when we were lieutenants. That he'd been sexually assaulted 3 times in his life. And
that's right.
And he essentially numbed himself for what, over 3 decades?
Yeah. Uh-huh, exactly.
With alcohol and all that. So I want
isolation.
Right. And then, you know, and thoughts of killing yourself that led you to a vet center. So I want to talk about, as you began to change your life, what are the gateways that you had to go through, and when do you hear the ideas in post-traumatic winning, and how does that impact what you've gone through? So talk to me about you begin to turn your life around.
Yes, exactly. And as you mentioned, yes, I had suicide thoughts for a number of years. And I would go ahead and fuel those thoughts or try to numb those thoughts as I thought I was trying to numb them. But actually what I was doing is fueling them through alcohol and extramarital affairs, all kinds of nonsense. Which caused me, just for those who didn't have the chance to hear the first side of the story of the first part, that caused me to be a rage and to lose all kinds of jobs that I had, to be homeless twice. And you know, as difficult as that is with an individual, you can imagine having at the time 5 children and doing that. So this just, you know, began a...
So wait a minute. What do you do?
Spiral downhill. I'm sorry, what?
What do you do when you're homeless with 5 kids?
Well, thank God for my beautiful wife, Judith, because she had friends who had helped her through all the trauma that she was undergoing. And she reached out to them. And, you know, they were able to put us in their home.
Wow.
Not all as a family, and sometimes as a family. You know, some of my kids for the second time were separated from one another because we didn't have any means of living in the places where they found us, a place to lay our head. It was just frustrating, and you can imagine the trauma that created for my wife and my children. And of course, at the time, not only did I want anything to do with myself, but of course, you know, my children and my wife, you know, I don't know how they were hanging on by fingernails, but they really didn't want anything to do with me because they looked up to their father for help in many aspects, and I was the cause in their mind of where they were. So. that answers your question. I hope it does.
No, it's just, yeah, what do you do? So, what gets you, what turns you?
Turns my life around?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, it was a miracle in part one. I went ahead and I was at the end of my rope, and I thought that the only way out, the best solution was for me, because we had just been evicted from one place because I didn't have the finances, and then brought into another place in Aiea, Hawaii, which is on the island of Oahu, through the help of my wife's friends, through the church that we were attending at the time. And I thought that the best way for me to resolve the challenges that I had brought in their lives was for me to take my life. And so I had this plan to jump off the bridge that went from Aiea to Pearl City in Hawaii on the island of Oahu during a heavily trafficked time at the beginning of recess for school, and not recess, but when the kids come out and the traffic started building up on really the one true highway that they had there, so that no one could come to my aid. That's how distraught I was and distressed. And the night before, I get this phone call to go down to the interview for a job as a financial planner. And I really didn't want a job because that was in my mind, all that was going to do is to delay the solution that I thought in my mind for my family to receive for finally help. And to make a long story short, the interview went over what I expected. I missed the bus that I took. I took the bus because the parking is very expensive down in Honolulu, particularly around Ala Moana or Waikiki. And I couldn't find a connecting bus to get me on time because it was now 5 o'clock instead of 3 or 3:30 when I wanted to kill myself. And I'm panicking. And by the grace of God alone, there happened to be a vet center on the street right behind me. And that's when I came in. And that began, the door began to open. I saw a crack only because of the individual that was for the first time that I told her exactly what had taken place in my life. I told her about the three rapes that took place in my life from probably age, I think I was 23 at the first time, all the way to probably 25 or 26 at the max. And fortunately, she sent me up to the VA, but unfortunately, their methodology of giving me hope or help was medication, and that's not what I was looking for. Counseling they offered me, but although I began to talk, it really wasn't giving me the support and the help to overcome where I was in life. The only person at the VA at that time that was really helping was a gal named Maureen, and she at the time, I don't know if the VA has it now, but they had a vocational rehabilitation counselor there at the mental health center in Honolulu, Hawaii, at Triplett. So I began to go down this journey, and still, you know, although I was finding, help, I needed to overcome my financial challenges. I had challenges in so many areas, and it's a long process. But that began to open the door. But realistically, because I was so deep in mud in my life, I wasn't able to come out of the messes until my daughter Divine helped me. And that was, I believe, in 2015, 2016. So here's 10 plus years have gone by. but nothing but continual struggle. And I wasn't struggling well, and my family along with me. My relationships had been completely destroyed. My wife and children really didn't want to deal with me. You know, she only stayed around because she felt, you know, I need to do it for the children. And the children hung around because they were young enough that they had this, you know, stay. We eventually right. found a means of going ahead and finding housing, and I was helped through Maureen eventually through the VA of getting a job back again, working at Pearl Harbor as a Navy in a Navy civil servant position. So that opened the door for us to begin to start a sense of healing. I say that only because the finances
all right, so hold on, let me get this straight. So the suicide plan that day happens in 2005.
Yes, that's correct, Mike.
Okay, and then we go sideways till about 2015.
2015, right.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
And so
you get this job in what year? You get this job in 2015?
I got this job in 2009.
Got it.
At Pearl Harbor. I'm still in Hawaii. I'm at Pearl Harbor. I'm working as the waterfront liaison officer responsible for overseeing a contract, the BAE, at the time for loading and offloading all the ammunition and for all the ships and submarines coming into Pearl Harbor. And I had worked that job before as a contractor for the same company back in 1991 when I was relocated by the Navy from the Philippines because of Mount Pinatubo. But I eventually lost that job because of my challenges. So here I am. Once again, I had another miracle, and I'm restored. And the purpose for that is in 2000 and I think at 9 or 2000 and I believe it was 2009, maybe 2010. My oldest daughter, who had married on Hawaii, and this young man from San Antonio, and she mentions, "Hey, I got to get out of here. This is just too much." So they relocate to Texas, San Antonio, and she eventually gets pregnant. They find out about the birds and the bees, and my wife goes to help her, and she wants to get out of Dodge, and she wants to take the kids. So I go ahead and let her go, and they move over. They left Halloween night on 2010, and they arrived November 1st, 2010. And so I'm still working for Hawaii and still sleeping basically on the couch in a friend of hers house. I have no real place for myself because I couldn't manage the money because I was using it for myself. And so she has all the funds and stuff. And so what happened was because of that job, I was able to send my my vehicles for free through the Navy from Hawaii to the mainland and eventually be transported to Texas, which was a blessing to my wife and my children because they used one while I was back there, and eventually I sent the one that I was using.
Got it. So your daughter does is helps you get to San Antonio.
Exactly.
All right. So fast forward to.
I don't want nothing to do with this
right,
anymore.
Fast forward to 2015, 2016, and what happens in 2016? So you're not going to kill.
Very important year. 2015 is a very important year because it begins to lead me back to you. And for all those that know, you were a Boston Red Sox fan because your dad
used to be my dad worked for them. Okay, I rooted for my dad's team. I was never a fucking Red Sox fan.
Okay. But anyway, but I am a diehard Met fan, and the Met fan, and since 1962, and in 2015, the Mets are into the World Series again. And Pete Hernandez starts talking about your dad on the radio. On the TV as I'm watching the games. And so I began to start searching for you. And like I said on the other call, I can't find this guy. He's up in North Dakota, this one Mike McNamara that I come across, and I can't believe he's over there. So I just kind of blow it off, and I continue to try to tread through the mud that I'm living through, and then my daughter, probably the latter part of, I think it was either in the latter part of 2015 after the World Series. And of course, I guess I did my penance. The Mets lost that series to the Kansas City Royals. My daughter, Divine Grace, she's still back in Hawaii because I had moved four out of my five children. She stayed there because she had a good job and she was going to college at the University of Hawaii there. She starts her own healing process and she tells me, Dad, you need to read this book. You need to find out about, there's ways of you overcoming your hurts in life and, you know, you can get healed. And I became very, very open to what she was sharing with me. And it turns out that the program that she led me to was this called Celebrate Recovery. And I went there for a while, and people were being very open about sharing their trauma. And for the first time, other than in 2005, I hear people becoming outspoken with their trauma. And you were given an opportunity to talk if you felt you wanted to do so. I didn't feel led for quite some time because I was still very shameful and guilt, very much guilt-filled of everything that has happened to me. I was fearful of how they would respond to me when I spoke about my trauma. And I didn't really do so for quite some time. And then finally, I did so, and I didn't really release the dam, so to speak, until I decided that, wait a minute. As I was talking that day, and the guy that was the facilitator, I don't remember what his name was, he was up there in Laverne, Texas, by China Grove. For those that don't know, he tells me, hey, I can't have you mentioning to the other guys that were in there, you know, what Tim has just shared. And I just began to release the bits of the iceberg. It needs to stay here. And that caught me off guard because, wait a minute, I need to tell others. And so I took that that response. And I didn't hide it. I decided I needed to come free to my wife and children. So before church that same week, I said, hey, before we go to church, I sent out a group text to all my children. And at the time, two of them were married and they lived outside the house. And then Divine that lived in Hawaii. We all need to talk. Dad's got something important to share. And so I told him to come over, and I began to, without making excuses, I said, you know, I'd be willing if you guys would just listen, because it's important for me for you to listen, and I want to tell you about what happened in my life. And that's what I did. I began to open up, and I held nothing back. I allowed the dam to overcome. My legs were my knees were knocking. I held nothing back. I not only put my best foot forward, but I put was wearing my my heart on my sleeve, as they say.
Right.
And I was just overwhelmed by their response, Mike. I really was.
And as we talked about last time, the response that you feared was nowhere in the zip code, was it?
Oh, no. But, you know, like I said, you know, I had distant relations, especially with those that are supposed to be most important.
Right.
You know, your loved ones.
Which is normal. And, which is normal when you do this, because when you drink, right, and you begin to act out stuff, who's in the frag pattern? Well,
right.
People that are close to you. And slowly but surely, you destroy those relationships.
Right. And the biggest thing that kept coming to my mind is when I began this this coming out process, a true coming out process, coming clean, should I say. And in 2005, like I said, the VA reached out to me and the vote counselor reached out to me. And one of the things she said is, Tim, I want you to put in a claim for the trauma that happened in your life, particularly in the Marine Corps, so that you can, you know, possibly receive some benefits, you know, particularly as it affected your mental health.
Right.
And your relationships. So when I had to do that, I had to put together a claim, and part of that claim, Mike, and the reason why I'm telling you this, because this is the fear that was in my mind and was about to blind me for this particular Sunday. I had to have my children write statements of the pain that they witnessed that I caused to their lives. So I had read that, and immediately, years later, here comes these overwhelming thoughts of they're not going to receive you. They're going to head for Dodge. You're not going to accomplish what you're hoping to receive from them. But I didn't listen. I didn't allow those lies to overcome my my intention. I faced fear in the face with courage, and like I said, I didn't let back. I allowed everything to come free. Everything that was built up inside me for decades just come out, and there was nothing. Not only was I crying, but I was crying more because they were crying. We never went to church. We had church at the house. We had home church. When it was all said and done, my wife said, "Well, what shall I make you?" We stayed around the house for the rest of the night. I don't think we went home until 7 o'clock, and we probably met her because we normally went to church around 11. And you know, and so it was just a joyful event. It was true celebration.
All right, so now. Parallel to this, and certainly unbeknownst to me, I begin to do post-traumatic winning.
Right.
So as you begin to listen to Almarine Radio, and you begin to hear that stuff, what was the impact of that on you?
Well, it was absolutely nothing short of maximum encouragement and strength. Because I remember when I finally connected with you, once again, they were talking about baseball as I watched the Mets. I decided, surely I can find this guy. And I reached out to you, and you had the All-Marine Radio, but you said, hey, I'm working on something that I really feel is going to be helpful to many, many, many people. And I began to listen, and I heard stories of others that that they experienced trauma, and it was normal. I heard stories that that there's a better place to go in life after trauma. I learned through your resources that you can overcome, and you can thrive in life. And what was great, not only about the resources that you post on your page, but you also post the live podcasts of people sharing their hearts and how they had finally made the decision to overcome, to live a life that they were meant to live. They recognized their weakness, and they finally began to step up and to speak out and cry for help. And there was a program called Post-Traumatic Winning that was the that created a pathway for them to live a life of joy, of happiness. And that's what we're put on this planet to do, you know. And it's normal, but it's not normal to stay in the place that I was, in the life of others.
I don't know if that's right, though. I think that the vast majority of people, Tim, stay in that place because here's and you can. I want you to comment on this because we talked about this last Thursday because our conversation was in my head. The third commandment is trauma is trauma is trauma, and that's how it impacts us. But how we view that trauma is colored by a couple of things. One is guilt, and the other one is shame, right? And you struggled with both those things. And so to me, when you don't have guilt, and I'll use myself as an example, I don't have any guilt or shame relative to the stuff that's happened to me. I mean, it's happened to me. But I mean, I didn't have, so I wasn't as encumbered as let's say you were. But let's just say that's just the way it is. Okay. Now you go seek help.
Yeah, but I want to correct you because you realize that others have been encumbered by it, and that's why you stepped up.
What?
You
oh, no, well, the other day, I hadn't, you know, that's what's really interesting about this experience is that a friend of mine, Will Costantini, who's on Thursday, he calls me one day and he says, hey, I have a question for you. I said, what? He said, I don't know that what I went through losing my wife was traumatic.
Right.
And I said,
I heard him say that.
Right? And so we had this conversation about, is there a timeline associated with trauma? And I said, what are you fucking crazy? He said,
right.
No. He said, I think what happened to me was tragic, but I'm not sure it was. And so what he has is in his head, this traumatic thing that happens in combat, right? It's very sudden and explodes literally sometimes on you. And that this happened, I said, Will, you talk about losing your wife in less than a week.
Right.
And I said, so if you can give me the appropriate timeline, I mean, I'll consider it. But other than that, I think you're fucking crazy. But
right.
But it's these kind of discussions about these issues that have made me wiser. And that's what post-traumatic winning is. It's these discussions over the course of 4.25 years now that is embodied in post-traumatic winning and all of that, that wisdom that comes from this, to include last week the conversation that we had about the impact of shame and guilt on the way we deal with trauma. And so, to me, you have that in you, and now you go seek help.
Right.
The primary treatment protocols is to get you the medications that you need to sleep and control your anxiety, and then sends you to group therapy and individual therapy. That's how we do it.
Yes.
And
that's
so
what was afforded me before I came across post-traumatic winning after I reconnected with you and my
friend. Right. And so, but what happens is it doesn't work. That's endurance.
Right.
That's teaching you, okay, Tim, we're going to teach you how to bear this burden.
Mm-hmm.
And your burden is fucking heavy, man.
Right,
I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody else who deals with what you deal with. That's some serious shit. And so if all you're going to hold out for me for the rest of my life is the ability to endure this, I mean, fuck, that's awful. And so what happens is people get tired of the meds and they throw them away. And unless they have an exceptional therapist, they stop going to therapy. I don't know anybody who has an enduring relationship with a therapist. Anybody. And so I would tell you that the whole endurance thing, it's a loser. It doesn't work. If you can't show, you know, and Springsteen, I started, like, I'm binge, like, listening to Springsteen now. If I could take one moment into my hands, Mr. I ain't a boy, I'm a man, and I believe in the promised land. If you can't restore that hope, right, of going to the promised land, that in life this is going to get better. In life, I can live that kind of life. If you can't restore that life, that hope, and all that I have is endurance, well, fuck that, man.
Yeah, you're going to end it.
Well, and then you can see how it happens. I get so tired. There's nothing better out there for me. I just want the pain to go away. Fuck this. Right. And that's the path
I
would say.
That's what I said.
Well, but I think that's relatively normal, though.
Right.
When the pain is so great and there is no hope, what am I going to do? Walk down this coal mine for the rest of my fucking life?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think I don't think it's a matter of weakness. I think that we don't know. It's a matter of ignorance. And I say that literally with no editorial comment associated with it. It's literal ignorance. I just don't know. And when when I do this with people and they look at me with tears in their eyes and like, holy shit, how did you get here? And I always say, well, I'll tell you the truth. And they're like, what? I'm like, I'm the smartest motherfucker you know.
Well, Stacy Pogliano figured that out too. And so did Mike Tyker.
Right. No, I mean, and all the different lives that get changed by people just talking about their own epiphany, Catholic term, that they have relative to this shit. And then, oh my God, there's a path out there. And if I follow these rules and go down that path, I can live that life. And so, yeah, but I don't think it's a matter of weakness. I think it's a matter of the trauma is great. And if I'm in the third floor down, you're in like the seventh floor down because you're ashamed. And even like I can talk about my shit and how I don't handle it well. And you're going to sit in that room and you're going to listen. You're not going to say a fucking word, are you?
Right.
Because what happened to me wasn't acceptable. I wouldn't share it with these guys because I don't know. And so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was the reason why I stopped going to not only therapy with the VA, but also with the Celebrate Recovery, because I felt that, hey, wait a minute. I'm a square peg going into round hole. All these other guys are talking about their drinking and this and that, but it didn't stem from what I went through. And it wasn't until I reconnected with you that I found out that there are other men that have been abused, not only in the military, but you've come across, numbers that are in the military, but it also takes place outside the military.
Well, and you can see why the military would be, first of all, I want to be part of something good, right? And you can see why people would gravitate. I want to be on a good team and why they would, I want to get out of this situation. So I want to be on something good. I want to get the fuck out of here. And so you can see why the military would be is a desirable thing. That'll get me out of here. It'll put me in a good environment. And then bad things happen to you in the military.
Right.
And so you can see. And so, but again, as a leader, did I ever know any of that? Fuck no, man. No. If I would have known that, would it have changed the way I dealt with my Marines and sailors? Yes, but I didn't know shit, man. I didn't know
and
shit.
Neither did the leaders that were above me prior to me getting commissioned.
Because we didn't
trained.
Yeah, we didn't do this shit, right? We didn't do this shit. If you went, I don't know if he's still alive, but what was his name? Lieutenant Colonel Kiley?
Yes, John Kiley.
If you were to contact him, he's still alive, I'm sure. I'm not sure, but I would think. If you contacted him and say, "Hey, sir, I want to apologize for my behavior, but I just want to tell you a story about me. You know, if you'd care to talk to me, I'd love to talk to you." And,
yeah, and also, that's a good idea. And also Terry Murray.
Oh, man. And so those, and so when you think about that, they didn't know anything and we didn't know anything. And then you go to the places that they tell us to go. And then the help they give us doesn't work for probably half to two thirds of it, according to an NYU study of studies, but we don't know this shit. So you're not atypical, in my opinion. You're like Joe fucking Schmo from Long Island, going down the road trying to deal with all this shit. But so you start listening to Post Traumatic Winning, and every bit of it resonates, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I got confirmation right off the bat.
Why?
You know, we're talking about from the first. Well, first of all, if you look at the first commandment, it talks about stop faking it. Stop faking it. And that's what I did. I stopped faking it. I had to begin to be honest about my struggles. I had to give permission to my children to begin to talk about it themselves. And they did that afternoon. I said it went on for hours. We had house church, you know. And for them, I didn't realize that one of my daughters was going to, you know, counseling. She was beginning to speak about it. And so it gave me confirmation. It's like going down the right path, and then you hit the mark, and you get a drink of water when you're running your race, and you say, oh, wow, that feels good. Well, that's what it felt. It felt good to get that drink. It revitalized me, and I kept going on and on and on. I kept going back to the website. I kept checking in with the podcasts, you know, and more and more that I heard about other people that you were interviewing with, they were coming free too, and so that gave more fuel to my tank. It wanted to return more and more and more to a place that I was beginning to get back in my life. I was beginning to become restored. I was allowing myself to be healed. And it eventually, as I told you a couple of weeks ago, hey, Mac, I got my spring back in my step. You know, I not only have a bounce, but I got hops. I'm like, you know, I was remembering last night after you and I spoke, it brought back a memory of my brother being on a pogo stick, jumping all these obstacles that we had tried to place in front of him. And now this is what it's given me. It's given me the tools in my belt so I can pogo over the obstacles in life. And I'm going to have bad days, absolutely. I'm going to have challenges, absolutely. But I have the tools that is allowing me to thrive now. And my wife is, you know, she sees, what the heck's going on here? And the other day, you know, she decides to look through all these pictures of the kids and family. And she comes across all these Marine Corps pictures. I didn't even know that they were there. And there was one I didn't send you, but it was just when, you know, I was twisted on Diego Garcia. And I didn't want that to be out there again.
There you go. There you go. You might want to keep that one to yourself.
I did.
So,
you know, I'm working out more. I'm walking again, which is essential to mental health. I believe that's either six or seven of the commandments.
Seven.
I no longer drink. I occasionally have a glass of wine, as my wife, you know, says, "Hey, you want something?" Because you ate a bunch of junk today. But it's not a habit. It's not a means of self-medicating. And I told you, you know, that I have a vet center counselor, and that now that I eventually check in, who's former Marine. He was just overwhelmed by what has happened with me over a past couple of months. It was like, what's going on? I said, All Marine Radio, post-traumatic winning. There, I told you about it before, and I was beginning. This guy's on a roll, and he's not coming back. And, you know, there's lives to be changed. And he knows it in his heart, and he's got the bounce back in his step. He's hopping. And you know, all kinds of doors are opening for him because there's people to be reached. And so I'm excited for you. I'm excited for, more importantly, not only am I excited for you, Mike, but I'm excited for the lives that are going to be reached, not only on bases, but also, you know, across America in fire stations, the EMTs, and just households in the community now once this play. I mean, watch out, Satan, we're coming, baby.
Yeah, I would tell you that the thing that excites me the most is when somebody sees the path and they see the rules and you know, and I'm not a therapist, right? And I don't really care how that makes you feel. What I care about is that you get to the place that you want to go. And I think my job is to tell you the truth and give you the tools and then challenge you. And how does that make you feel? 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 And then relating it back to some, you know, something in your childhood, as Tim Lynch said last week. I mean, come on. Like, where is that getting me? Where is that getting? How is that helping me? And so to me, we can help so many people. And you're an example of it, Tim, is that, you know, people would look at your life and say, there's no way that guy ever comes back. There's no way that guy ever gets, you know, a pogo stick back in his life. There's no way that guy ever lives up to the promise of his life. And now here you are,
right.
You know, and just getting started on that. And we'll wait right. And see what happens as you begin to touch other people's lives. The other thing that I should tell everybody is, like, I didn't know this, but Tim's got a sister that's like smoking hot. Like, what?
Yes.
He sends me something, a link with it yesterday. And I said, are you sure you're biologically related to this woman? you see promise in people and then it gets derailed. And
right.
There is no experience in the world. There's no drug in the world. There's no high in the world like helping somebody else and helping change their life. There is
right.
There's no high like that in the world.
Right, rescuing them.
Right, and this is just showing, restoring their faith and their hope that there is a path. And then showing them these are the rules to stay on the path. And if you don't follow these rules, you're going to wind up in the ditch. But if you
right.
do follow these rules, you can go to that place. And then from that place to this place is a function of how much you'll give in your life. And if you're willing to give, then you can go to that place all the way up there.
Right, right. And you're talking about not giving you're talking about giving up yourself to others.
Absolutely.
Yes, right. And, you know, the first part is you got to get restored. You got to get your mind right, right? I like the fact, well, what you said earlier, Michael, that you're not afraid of challenging them. You know, you basically are asking people right up front, do you really want to come to a better place? Do you really want to be healed? Do you want to know and recognize that there is help available for you, true help. And you, I've heard you on many occasions talk about how you put people at attention, so to speak, and they make the decision because it takes a commitment, because you're overcoming mindsets. Because when trauma, as I've come to learn, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you know, I remember I was an enlisted Marine, and I only had a GT of 110. I didn't go to some some USD program where they enlighten you on the world.
Jay, just for the record, I'm at 131.
Oh, see? Well, see. Like you said, I was on the bottom floor of the building.
Right. The only reason I know that was because one of my Marines pointed out to me on a battalion roster.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was standing officer of the day at 1-5. I'm a second lieutenant. And we're in the duty hut, and, you know, there happened to be this roster. And it was the alpha roster of the battalion. And he looks and he goes, "Holy shit, sir, you have a really high GCT. And I said, "I do?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "What is that? Is that, like, I took a test, right?" He said, "Yeah, that's a test they make us all take."
Yeah, the ASVAB.
He said, "You're up there with Colonel Gregson." I went, "Oh, shit," right? He's smarter than shit. And so I used to use that when I talked to my Marines. And I said, "And if I ever hear anybody say I'm a dumbass, okay, I want you to know that it's factually incorrect. My GCT is 131. I'm smarter than all you motherfuckers." They'd be like, "Who is this guy, man? Where did he come from?" Yeah.
Right, right.
I'm smart. I have one test that proves it. As my departed dad would say, the dog shines on a dog's ass every once in a while.
Well, I had to take my test twice. Once was in the recruiter's office, and I didn't even score 100. And then he gave me some stuff to look at and review. So I had to go get, I think it was a Barron's book at those days back in the 80s they had. Yeah, it was a Barron's. And I had to study that before he took me down to Brooklyn. The Fort Hamilton. I gained my 110, and I think I took it over. I think I had a 105 or something like that, and I had to retake it again to qualify for the enlisted commissioning program.
There you go.
But even though I must have been a mushroom, and apparently there was some light shined on me, maybe it was only from heaven above. I want people to know that that same light can shine in the midst of their loneliness and their struggles, their limitations, everything that they're facing in life, and that light comes through post-traumatic winning. And that was the light that that truly shined and opened my my mind, like I was talking about the mindsets and allowed me to realize that, hey, these people that he's calling on to do an interview with and do a podcast, they're overcomers. I want that. And I had to commit to it. And the reason why I'm telling this right now, to remind others that they need to do exactly what I did. And that is, the first thing, I had to have the gonads, the balls. I had to have the courage to face fear once again and call my roommate, who I've been talking with for quite some time, and said, "Hey, bro, can I ask you something? Can we talk a little longer than the scheduled call that you envisioned us to be talking about today?" And that's where I came clean. And the further walls were knocked down when I told you about the stories, and you were as silent as you were right now, or as you are right now. But when you spoke, you were so happy for me, and you instilled in me confidence for a better tomorrow. And that's what you do on each and every caller, whether it's the first time and they're reaching out through an email or a phone call to you, like you were telling me yesterday, the staff sergeant that called you. And you do each and every time if you conclude your presentations. I'm proud of you, man. That takes guts.
I don't think it does. I mean, it's.
I'm talking about for those that are on the other end of this podcast. It takes guts for coming forward, but you got to commit with the knowledge that there's a better place to live. Are you tired? Are you tired of what you're doing? Are you tired of, like I was, are you tired of being on this treadmill like a hamster?
Right.
This wheel that's going around and around, and it ain't getting no better. And in that many aspects or many reasons of your life, it's only becoming worse.
Right.
And, you know, trauma affects our brain, but there's a counterattack that you can launch into, that you can effectively employ, and those are the tools of post-traumatic winning. And the main thing that they give you is, you know, to come to a place of joy, Mike, first you have to discover the meaning in life. And, you know, you talk about that on your show many times. You talk about Viktor Frankl being a resource for those that really want to change. And it's true. You can be like the caterpillar, you know, and make that transformation. And you gotta take the first step, and you gotta decide who you want to call first. Who's going to be the first individual to become a member of your tribe?
Well, let me tell you what I think happens before that, though. I think somehow or other, and this is why, to everybody who listens to this, you don't need to be a therapist to help somebody.
Absolutely.
And I would tell you that the vast majority of us don't need therapists. We need somebody to talk to.
Okay?
Exactly. Somebody to talk to. And so if you listen to this, if you'll go sit down and download those 3 goals and 10 commandments to your phone, that is the essence of what I've learned in 4+ years of doing that. If you won't be afraid to say, could I talk to you? And you know there's nothing wrong with you, right? That this struggle that you're going through is absolutely normal because of what you went through. You know that, right? And they'll look at you and say, who are you, right? And then that will begin a conversation that will change your life. But the first thing that you have to do is you have to convince them, and it won't take much, right? That there is a path.
You're talking about the individual that you've chosen to open up to.
Right. Before the person will open up to you about whatever it is, you have to show them that there is a path, because they've gone down so many bullshit paths in their life, you know.
Right.
You have to convince them that it's real and that they can go there.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works, in that you you do that by telling your story. That's why you don't fake it. And you say, look, this happened to me, then this happened to me, then this happened to me. And they look at you like, holy shit. And this is what I found out. And I'm telling you that you can go to the same place too. And so that truth that is so powerful, that's non-refutable, is to me the first thing that plants the seed of, holy shit, that guy went there.
Right.
I could go there too. And it's that hope that fuels the whole thing. It's that hope,
exactly.
and it's those steps. It's not how do you feel. It's like, okay, dumbass, you got to stop drinking. You got to get physically active. You got to take care of your money. You got to begin to do these things, and you got to live with some self-discipline. If you can't do that, you can't make progress. And so it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense to me, and I know all along I should have done it. But it's made operable because now I know where I can go.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear Stacy Falzerano. I hear Matt Kiker. And those people have done it. And if they can do it, I guess I can do it too.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, that hope is first. That is so important.
Yes.
That in it enables the rest of the process, and then all of a sudden they begin to kind of stick their toe in, and it's real and it resonates, and there's other people there, and they get more strength from that, and then they get to the point where you went through. It's like, I can do this, and I need to be honest because I know where I'm going. I've got that spring in my step. You know, I'm even talking about a pogo stick when most people don't even know what a fucking pogo stick is, right? Right?
I do. And my brother Bob still pogos, I'm sure.
Oh, my God. I hope not.
All around La Mesa.
So, and that's my point where when I end the show every day, I always say, don't be afraid to go change somebody's life. Because there's people that you don't even know, and Tim's an example of it in my life, that have had devastating experiences in their life through no fault of their own. They've had devastating, right. And they're not telling you about it. They're not talking about it. But when you tell the truth about you, you plant the seed in them, man. He's talking about his shit. Maybe I could talk to him about my shit. And the stories I tell, I have complete strangers that are so they want to live a better life. They want to talk to somebody who they think understands. But they've gone down these bullshit roads we give them, and they don't work.
Right.
And they don't work. So I don't. I don't know.
It all starts from a sense of caring, and that's what you do. And that's why to piggyback on what you said, that's why you have the people on so that they can, find out about the path.
Well, I want people to know.
I
want people to know that, look, if hammerheads like you can do it, right? Anybody can do it.
Right.
Guy's got a GCT exactly. of 110. Come on. Come on. But it's important.
You got to tell them what the GCT is so that they know what they're talking about.
It's a test of intellectual capability, okay?
Right, and I was determined to be a numbskull.
Exactly, right? I think in order to get in the Marine Corps, you have to have 85 or 86.
Right.
Right, something like that.
So I was above that.
Yeah, he was in the upper 50%. But that's why, again, it's putting your hand out. And so, right. when I'm talking to you last night about this becoming a play and being done in communities around the country, you can see it, can't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's why I talked to you about my sister, Regina McMahon Snyder, who's an actress herself, and can look her up and you can find out her resume. She's been in all sorts of things, but she realizes that people can overcome whether their trauma or many, many, many challenges in life through the stage and reach another. That's what post-traumatic winning is all about. It's you're overcoming yourself. You're preaching to yourself as you're preaching to others.
And you're sure you're biologically linked to this woman?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, it wasn't the postman. All my children, it might have been the postman, like I was telling you last night. It was probably the stork dropped me off at the wrong address, because all my brothers and sisters, our lookers, my three other brothers, my four other brothers, because I'm the oldest of eight, are all are handsome. My three sisters, Regina has a twin, Angela, and my other sister, Marie, they're all gorgeous. And so that's why I say that the stork must have got the address wrong in the Bronx where I was dropped off. But,
all right, let me ask you one.
My parents did a good job raising me. So
no, there you go. No. No, there you go. Semper Fidelis to your dad. If you didn't listen to part one, he was a Marine. Let me ask you. So people that are struggling, that are listening to this, that are struggling with their own traumatic experiences. What is your message for them, Tim?
Well, first of all, from this interview and from all the other podcasts that are offered on Post-Traumatic Winning or All Marine Radio, I want you to get inspired. I truly do. I want you to get inspired that you can live life differently, life again, life as you desire it. As I mentioned and Mike has mentioned, you can begin to put spring back in your step. You can turn your bounce to hops. You can pogo stick joyfully over the obstacles of life instead of turning away from them due to fear, shame, or guilt. And in doing so, as you become an expert in finding that joy for yourself, you're going to want to, it's going to be so much a part of you. It's going to ooze out of you, as it naturally does to you, Mike, when you go to a Home Depot and other places, that you're going to naturally extend your hand, as you just mentioned, to others and allow them to know the same. Because people don't really want to hear about how much you know. What they're more concerned about is how much you care about them. And the fact that you experience joy for yourself and extend your hand to another, that opens their heart. Because you show sincere sense of care, and you'll end up living a life of overcoming pain. And you can laugh at yourself. You can switch on Judge Judy and laugh and say, "Hey, I used to be like that." respect.
No, biggest thing is, I was telling Tim last night, what changes in your life is the dominant emotion is not pain and remorse anymore. The dominant emotion is joy.
Right.
And that comes from understanding the truth and helping others. And if you'll do that, then you can spend your life in joy. And it's weird hearing like guys who were Marines say that kind of shit, but it's the truth. I think it's hugely, hugely important to just know that that's the truth, and know that you can help take people there, and that, you know, you can't ever, you know, convert your trauma to joy, but you can overwhelm your trauma with joy, and in that way, you know, just fundamentally change your life. So anyway,
oh, that's absolute truth, because you know that joy is a fruit. And even though it's hanging from a broken tree, it'll still feel refreshing for those that you say, "Here, take and eat of it." So that's what I hope people to take away, that post-traumatic winning is filled with nothing but broken people that are eating the food of joy. So take a bite, too.
Yeah, take a bite. All right. First of all, man, I just want to thank you for coming on and finishing this interview today. I appreciate it as always, and I hope you don't mind in the future when, you know, sometimes we roundtable about this stuff, that I give you a call and bring you back on, and you can be a part of one of those.
Oh, I'd be honored. Just like, you know, there are other people like Peyton Davis, like Stacey Falzerano, Mike, Matt Kiker, and all the devil dogs that you got on the table. I would be honored to be a knight.
There you go. All right. Well, first of all, congratulations. I think I speak for a lot of people in extremely proud of your comeback. And happy that something that I do had something to do with it. And so keep doing good things, man. I appreciate it.
All right, simplify. Love you, babe.
All
thank
right.
you.
See you, Tim.
Regina Snyder loves you too.
There you have it. All right.
All right, buddy. Bye.
Well, there you have it. Yeah, I don't know. What do you say? Joy. You know, how do you turn trauma to joy? I'll tell you how. You give. That's how you get to the high life. That's the promised land that Bruce Springsteen talks about. And that's where we all should endeavor to go. So, here's a message from Bob Nielsen. Tim's a hero today. Yeah, you know, his story's amazing. And I think it's a pretty predictable story from my experience, and that is people wind up in bad places and they reach out and the help doesn't help. And I'm not hating when I just say, speak the truth, okay? And then they, and I'm not sure what percentage of that is, but I think it's a pretty large percent. And then most people kind of retreat back into his own, back into their own world, and they figure out what works for them. A fair amount resort to alcohol and just numbing themselves. A lot just fake it and stay away. Right? I mean, that's Vietnam-era mental health. Don't let the monkeys out of the cage and all that. Fake it and don't go near the closet. And hopefully it'll stay in the closet if you can avoid all the right things. And at some time, something will bring it out and then you deal with it and try to stuff it back in the closet. So anyway, I just want to thank Tim for coming on and sharing that story. Not an easy one to talk about, not an easy one to listen to, as Libby said last week. But I think about that, right? Think about Tim. Think about Matt Kiker. Think about Stacy Falzerano, Peyton Davis, all different people you've heard on this program. Every one of them was in a bad place. And all have found the path, you know, in this, you know, traumatic wisdom of Marines. Pretty cool stuff. Gonna become a play. Yeah, how about that shit? Yeah, it's awesome. And getting ready to go international. Bev, don't screw that up. Yeah, so exciting stuff. But nothing beats the joy you hear in somebody's voice, like you can hear it in Tim's voice. About that has to do with, you know, living the life they want to live and living the high life. So on a Monday, hour one, you'll get to hear about my incredible weekend. Mac's amazing weekend. And so, so don't touch that dial. That repeat itself, but you'll hear about a whole host of interesting experiences I had over the weekend. And getting ready to finish building the studio today. And then the fun part stuff, which is the creative part, and getting ready to film post-traumatic winning in there, and then do different Zoom events out of there, and then get ready to start the YouTube channel. Yeah, what's up? So anyway, on a Monday, have a great day. Don't be afraid to go change somebody's life. Because I promise you, in your life, you don't know this, but there's somebody like Tim in your life. So keep your ears right where they're supposed to be. And don't be afraid to ask those two questions. Can I talk to you? You know there's nothing wrong with you, right? So on a Monday, have a great one. I am out and go change somebody's life so they can live the high life, so they can get to the promised land.